This is a Hat Trick podcast.
Oh, lovely.
Hello, and thank you for listening to The Real Sex Education. Just before we get started on our episode on painful sex, we of course talk about a lot of treatment options. But before embarking on any of these, please always check in with your own medical advisor. On with the show. Do you remember your sex education? Was it helpful to you? Was it filled with scientific information rather than real, practical advice? I'm Diggory Waite, and this is The Real Sex Education. In this podcast, I'll be interrogating sexual myths, posing sex questions to special guests, and opening up our mailbox to answer your relationship conundrums. In order to do this, though, I need an expert. A sexpert, if you will. But the only sex and relationship therapist I know is my mum. Hello, mum.
Hello, Diggs.
Hello, and welcome to The Real Sex Education. I'm Diggory Waite, and I'm joined, as ever, by accredited sex and relationship therapist, Kate Campbell. Hello, mum.
Hello, Diggs.
Ladies and gentlemen, I never ask you to do anything for us, but if you could do this one thing, please could you do it? Could you give us a review on Apple or Spotify right now? Hopefully it's pretty easy. I think on Apple you have to go to our like show page and then scroll down to the bottom and then give us 5 stars, something like that there. And on Spotify, It's the same thing, but luckily it's at the top of the page, so you don't have to scroll that much. But it's really simple, really easy, and I think it's what helps us climb the ranks. So if you're listening right now and you haven't already, please do give us 5 stars, especially if you're one of the people that subscribed. And if you're not subscribed or following, please subscribe and follow right now. It really helps us out. Right, today, as I'm sure you've seen from the title, we're going to talk about why is sex so painful, or why can sex be painful? And I think when people think about this, they think of virginity, right? I think that's what a lot of people think about the first time. They think of heteronormative intercourse, penis and vagina, and they go, well, yeah, sex is painful the first time, obviously. So maybe let's start there. Why is sex painful for the first time when it's vaginal intercourse?
Well, the hymen is a piece of skin that covers the entrance to the vaginas, covers the vulva. And when you have sex for the first time, or when you insert a tampon for the first time, or anything else, it's stretched. And sometimes people find that a bit painful. I mean, the other thing is if it's your first time, you may not be as relaxed. You may not be as wet as you could be. So there are all sorts of things that might make it more uncomfortable, but it shouldn't be actually painful.
Right. But what if it is painful? Because I think a lot of people talk about that, it being painful.
Well, that's perhaps because they tense up.
Because of this
a bit.
This idea that it's
because
meant to be
of
painful.
This idea that it's meant to be painful. I mean, a lot of people, they don't actually have the hymen break or whatever it's supposed to do. I mean, there's
your
this cherry idea
popped.
That it's yes, it popped. But actually, that doesn't necessarily happen. It has little holes in it so that you can menstruate. So sometimes it can be torn a bit. When you might get a bit of bleeding, or sometimes it's just stretched. And then you'll quite often, if you examine your vulva, you'll quite often see the remnants on either side. So there's a little pretty, like a flower, petally area around the outside of the vulva on either side. That's the remains of your hymen.
Oh, wow. Okay. That's interesting. But that's very interesting. So sex the first time, people often think that it's supposed to be painful.
No.
To the point where, famously, our first guest ever on the show, Darren Harriott, said that. He was like, yeah, sex hurt for me the first time I had it. And I thought that was normal. So that's funny because often I think people think it isn't meant to be painful for guys, but it can be painful for guys as well.
Yeah, I mean, for some guys, sex is always painful. For about a fifth of men, there is pain associated with sex on an ongoing basis. And sometimes that comes on around middle age. Sometimes it's always the case. And often, if you get pain that's associated with ejaculation, that's probably due to infection or prostatitis sometimes. Sometimes no cause is found. And sometimes some people have pain in the pelvic area. It's usually in the perineum, or just in the penis and around the genital area, sometimes in the lower abdomen. But some people have that pain for years and there's no explanation for it. A lot of men have, yeah.
Wow.
But it's always worth going and getting it checked.
Yeah, if you have that sort of pain. And so prostatitis, I'm guessing that's to do with the prostate.
Inflammation of the prostate, yeah.
Interesting. What does that look like? What does that feel like?
Painful. I mean... Personally, I've not had it, so it's difficult to say.
Yeah, but I'm just trying to say that if you're at home and you're like, well, how do I know?
Well, you'd have pain. I mean, any pain, you should always get checked out. It's not normal to be in pain, you know, so always go and get it checked. Don't just say, I'm going to struggle on manfully. If you've got pain that persists, you need to get it checked. There's a difference between the kind of pain that you get in your abdomen, I guess, sort of in the pelvic area and specifically in the genitals. So pain in women, pain in the pelvic area is often associated with things like infection, so a chronic inflammatory disease, some sort of, you know, maybe an STI or chlamydia can be a cause, that kind of thing. And lots of women suffer from period pains, which we know about, and endometriosis causes really, really debilitating period pain and pain on intercourse. So if you're getting deep kind of pain on penetration, again, there might be something going on. It's always worth getting that investigated. It's not normal. So if sex is painful, that is not normal. That should be checked out. Whether you're male or female or whatever, however you identify, it is not normal. Get it checked. For first time sex, for men, if they've got a tight foreskin, then they may only become aware of it for the first time when they attempt sex. If it doesn't retract when they penetrate, then they might need to get that checked out and see if something can be done, because you can stretch the foreskin so it's not so tight.
Is that called phimosis?
Or balanitis? That's when it's too short. Balanitis. is the infection that you get when you don't retract the foreskin and the area underneath it becomes infected because you're not able to wash it.
Right.
I mean, that's sometimes just because it's tight. Where you've got very short bits that hold it on, then that's called phimosis.
Just because it's interesting, because that's what Darren Harriott had in that first episode. But he didn't get it checked out because he was like, well, sex is supposed to hurt when you first have it.
Yeah.
So,
I mean, and that's such a funny idea, isn't it? Because it's supposed to hurt girls, not boys.
But he didn't make that distinction.
I mean, sometimes some women get pain when they're aroused.
Right.
Nobody's completely sure why. And sometimes it's discovered that it's associated with some sort of condition. So they might have an infection or something. But for other people, it's just a thing that happens. And it is one of those weird things that never gets explained. But it's still always worth checking out to make sure it isn't anything. Mm-hmm. Women sometimes get crampy pains when they orgasm. Mm-hmm. So that crampy feeling is the uterus contracting. And that can be more intense post-menopause. But if you take away the womb, so if you have a hysterectomy for some reason, then a lot of women miss that crampy feeling because that's part of their orgasm.
Wow.
So when it's not there, their orgasm feels less intense and they don't like it and they wish they hadn't had the hysterectomy. Sometimes they're very glad because they've had painful, heavy periods or something. It's a great relief. But some people really don't like it. And it was one of the things that sex therapists are always banging on about, that women should be informed before they have an operation like that, that it can have sexual implications and that their orgasm may change. Not all women are told about this.
Yeah, because I wonder whether some professionals that's just... You know, it's not essential to know that. It's not to do with your health, I guess. It's just to do, you know, that's...
Well, it is, though, isn't it? It's to do with the sexual health and pleasure.
I agree. But I mean, that's probably what they're thinking. So then let's take it back then, because I've got a few big names here, because I think some people might be hearing about this, because some people might see the title and think, oh, yeah, sex is actually a bit painful for me. So maybe we can work out, give a few things about what it could be, some symptoms they might be experiencing, and maybe then we can go into maybe how to alleviate some of them. So what is vaginismus?
Oh, now vaginismus is different. Vaginismus is actually when somebody tightens up the muscles of the pelvic floor so much that nothing will get into the vagina. So everything's tightened up. So if you get pain on intercourse, which is known as dyspareunia, if you get that kind of pain, it's completely natural that you would tighten up. And for some people, they get what's called vulvodynia as well.
Mm.
And that's where you get pain in a particular, either around the whole of the vulva, but often a burning pain or a sharp stabbing pain in a particular area.
Mm-hmm.
And for some people, it's only when you touch it, in which case it's called provoked vulvodynia. And for some people, it's there all the time. And of course, because any touch makes them, but is acutely painful, people will tense up and then vaginismus develops as well. It used to be a big deal that people felt, oh, you know, I should be able to have intercourse and they would be working towards that. People don't see it as such a big deal now. And often just being able to relax about that can help quite a lot. You know, that there's not all the shame and terrible and ridiculously blamey feelings that people had about not being able to have intercourse. Is, you know, it's fine if you can't temporarily or even permanently. You know, the world won't end, but it might be something you want to do. So people often do seek help and treatment, and there are all sorts of things you can do. Vulvodynia is more of a skin condition than a sexual condition. People do often see gynecologists, but they may be better off seeing skin specialists for that kind of thing.
Because it's the touch that makes it.
Because it's the problem with the skin.
That's what you do with vulvodynia. You might go and see a skin. But what about vaginismus if there is this tightening?
Well, vulvodynia and vaginismus is often treated by sex therapists to some extent. So, you know, when you do Kegel exercises, the pelvic floor exercises to tighten up your pelvic floor.
Yes. Well, just remind people, because I was speaking to someone the other day who does listen to the podcast and they were like, what's Kegel muscles? So remind people at home what those are and the exercises.
Well, don't do this all the time. Just do it once to identify the area. But if you stop weeing, if you stop mid-flow, the muscles that you use to stop mid-flow and the muscles you want to exercise. And so you can do that by lots of sharp, quick tightening of those muscles and also holding them for a count of as long as you can go. You're doing them, aren't you? Yeah, yep. You can tell.
You can tell.
Yeah. So I always think it's that, do it, if you're a driver, do it at the traffic lights.
Oh.
Yeah.
That makes a lot of sense.
You know, you can do lots of quick, short ones and maybe do it for a count of as long as you can, a count of 10, a count of 20, a count of 30, 40, 50, 100. And that's really good for your pelvic floor. Mm. It stops you from becoming incontinent as you get older. And it's really good. You know, for boys, for men's penises, your penis droops as you get older. So that's your penis if you're looking when you're 20, 30, 40, 50, 60.
So is this when you're erect? Because my thumb is facing upwards. Like I'm doing a thumbs up.
Yeah.
But then the rest of my fingers are actually extended.
Yeah.
So then my thumb is at 20.
Yeah.
Fully erect penis.
Yeah.
Then
30.
Then 30 is my first finger. That's a serious droop.
My finger's sticking up a bit. But well, it does droop quite a lot, yeah. And it droops, it can be droopy downwards by the time you're older.
40, 50, 60. By the time I'm 60, it's just a straight droop down.
Yeah.
That's crazy. Well, I love the glee you're getting from that. But to combat that, Kegel exercises.
Kegel exercises. Now, if you have vaginismus, you're very good at tightening those muscles, so you have to do the opposite. So you have to do reverse Kegels. And it's easiest to do this if you're lying down and you kind of push the small of your back into the floor and drop those muscles. So it's the opposite. It's when you let go, when you've tightened, when you've been to the loo to stop the flow. It's when you let go and let the flow go again. So those are the muscles you're working in that stage.
Wow.
So it's just about releasing.
Mm-hmm.
You need to know where they are, and it's helpful to put, to do this naked, not always. If you're in the traffic lights, do not be naked.
Yeah.
But at some point to feel the muscles that you're using, to put a hand there so that you can feel which muscles you're using. And, you know, for men, you will feel the muscles in your perineum. And if you stand in front of a mirror, you can see your penis move when you're doing the exercises. I mean, it's helpful in sex. If you want to orgasm, some people orgasm just by using those muscles. If you're on the brink, sometimes using those muscles tips you over into an orgasm. You can hurry up sex by using the muscles, because it's, you know, your penis is being enclosed in muscles. It's probably quite arousing, so I'm told.
Mm.
But the more you can control them, the more you'll be able to control them. Should you ever have any problems, you'll be more able to relax as well as tighten up.
When you said then vulvodynia rather than vaginismus, do you mean vulvodynia?
Yeah, and then if you get any problems, because if you get any kind of pain, whether it's pain on intercourse, painful vulva, that's what normally leads to vaginismus, people right. tightening up because of the pain. That's mm-hmm. why they tighten up. The only exception to that, well, not the only exception, but one of the main exceptions to that would be people who have psychological reasons for not wanting to mm-hmm. have intercourse. They may not be consciously aware of them, so they tighten up. Sometimes people who've had medical procedures when they were younger just automatically tighten up at the thought of somebody coming at them with a speculum to do a smear test or with a penis. You know, they're anxious, sexual abuse can lead to tightening up as well. Mm-hmm. All sorts of things, but you can learn to relax, and people tend to have nice, kind partners who are understanding about it.
Yeah. Did we say what the benefits were for? So obviously you mentioned incontinence stuff, but were there any other benefits for women if to do their Kegel exercises?
Well, it helps with orgasms.
Yeah,
for men and women.
Yeah.
Men often say their orgasms are more intense.
It's interesting you haven't said yet what the reason that I was sort of...
What were you looking for?
I was looking for make you tighter, because that's the reason that people always say, for me, that's what people always tell me. They're always like, oh, well, I do that because it's going to keep me tight when I'm older as a woman. It's going to keep my vagina tight.
Oh, is yeah, well, true? Obviously, if your pelvic floor isn't up to much, you're not going to be as tight, but you can still use the muscles to grasp the penis. That's what I meant by more fun, yeah.
Because I was thinking then, you haven't said necessarily what people were saying. And I was like, shit, well, maybe they're wrong.
Oh, okay.
And they're going to be really upset.
Some people are just very, very lucky with a great pelvic floor. Some people are very unlucky. They don't have a great musculature to begin with. So sometimes, you know, as much as you might need specialist physio or even surgery for some people if their pelvic floor is really shot. But let's dwell on that.
Yeah, let's not dwell on
that. The reason I didn't mention it was because I didn't want to pelvic floor shame.
No, so, exactly, and quite right. Exactly.
If you know what I mean.
Quite right. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. But I thought it was... The reason... That's why I wanted to mention it is because I think for a lot of people, that, to be honest, is all the only reason they've mentioned it is because they're like, yeah, it's going to keep... And I wonder, maybe this is a different point entirely, but is that... I saw this thing, I think, the other day on Instagram or something, and they were like, the only reason we want to be told we're tight is for men anyway. So, like, fuck all that shit.
I mean, yeah.
And so it's interesting because, you know, you do have some people being like to me, oh, yeah, this is the way I'm going to stay tight. That's why I do these all the time.
I would never say that. I would never, ever, when I'm selling, I don't think I have ever, when I've been selling Kegels to my clients, I have never, ever said that. Because
exactly.
I think you should be doing it for yourself, not because you necessarily want to please your partner. As I said, you can have fun with it. I mean, I tell you the truth, a lot of women like to be able to manipulate or be in control of their pelvic floor if they want their partner to hurry up.
So a
good grip can end it
yeah.
more quickly.
Yeah, right. But that is interesting, because I think some people be like, yeah, but I am doing it for myself because I want to. Because if they're throwing themselves cum, no, shut up. Yeah, I think. You're absolutely right. Yeah, I think that's interesting as well, because, like you say, it's not really for yourself. If it's actually out of a fear of, quote unquote, getting loose or not being tight enough, it's not really for yourself.
I mean, like I said, to some extent that happens. People's pelvic floors are less healthy, and it's not their fault. They're doing all their exercises, but something's happened because of, you know, they've put on a lot of weight, or they've had a baby, or, you know, there are all kinds of things that can happen, and then it wouldn't be your fault. So I really don't want to shame people for the state of their pelvic floors.
Exactly. Okay. Let's talk about, so with vaginismus though, I've seen online a lot of people use, like, talking about using...
Trainers.
Trainers. What are trainers?
They're like little silicone, usually little tubes or cylinders of different sizes and shapes. And they can lubricate them and try inserting them into themselves so that they get used to bigger and bigger sizes.
So and that slowly...
they can...
stretch
out. Yeah, so they slowly, well, it doesn't stretch. It's just that they get used to accommodating them so they don't tighten as much. Doesn't actually stretch.
Stretch anything out, yeah.
No, it doesn't do any stretching. All it does is you know, allow
just get you,
to
used to it.
Get you used to inserting it, yeah. Mm-hmm. But I think I hate them because I think, for lots of reasons, some of the reasons, I'm not going to go into all of the reasons, but some of the reasons are, what's wrong with a finger? Just get used to it. And if you can tolerate anything, if you can tolerate a finger, or if you can tolerate just sort of any touch in that area, then maybe play with a penis. Play with a penis and try a soft one. Don't, not even erect. That's not to say that women in same-sex relationships might not want to put things into their vaginas as well. Yeah. Some do, some don't. Just get used to the feeling of something around the vulva. And quite often that, you know, the more you get used to it, then you can maybe allow an erect one near you. So long as you trust the person and you're sure they're not going to do anything like try and push it in, then you're in control. And gradually, you know, it's exposure therapy, isn't it? You gradually get used to it.
Mm-hmm.
And that way, that helps.
Well, I mean, some people online have said that they have really helped. So that, you know, so it does work for some people, but it is interesting
if
to
it
say
helps,
that.
It helps. I mean, you might want to use tampons, totally understand that. You might want to have intercourse, but again, it's not doing it. It tends to people not be doing it for themselves. They're doing it for their partner. And actually, you can have lots of fun in other ways. I mean, I would absolutely, if somebody came and said, I want to have intercourse, I want to and I can't wait, then you do everything possible to help them. But I just don't like the idea of trainers. I think one of the reasons was that when I when I was first a sex therapist, we used to have a little bag of trainers and you'd give them to clients to practice with, and then they'd bring them back and we'd boil them up and give them to... Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, and I never actually did that, actually, because I would never hand them out because I hate them. Mm-hmm. But that's what used to happen. It's disgusting.
God, well, that is disgusting. Yeah. So if your sex therapist ever offers you those, don't take them.
No, you can these days because a doctor prescribes them and you get your own set. Right, or you can buy a set. You can go online and buy a set if you really want them.
Surely people before were like, what do you mean you want them back? And they were like, yeah, if you could.
This was in the very olden days.
Yeah.
When, people used to do things like that.
This is another question I had for you. Is there a dick that's too big?
Some people do have a very large penis and some people do have a smaller than, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
It's the opening that you're thinking about, really, because once you get inside a vagina, the vagina balloons out. I mean, when you think you can get a baby out of there, that's, you know, that's amazing, isn't it? So actually, inside there's plenty of room. It's the opening that's painful. And that's the bit that people feel things. But actually, you know, even with an enormous penis, if you were very relaxed and you know, took it slowly, that shouldn't be a massive problem.
Yeah, that's what they call the penis, a massive problem. Let's talk quickly about, because you mentioned it as well, endometriosis.
Mm.
So what is endometriosis?
Well, it's when the lining of the womb grows in other places and it can grow anywhere. So it's so outside the womb. So it might be on the ovaries or on the outside of the womb or the fallopian tubes or, you know, anywhere on the peritoneum, the rectum. Some people have it in their lungs. It can just spontaneously appears. So it's not that it's spreading with tentacles. Mm-hmm. It's just that the cells don't just migrate. They can just exist. And that's which makes it really, really difficult for somebody. So deep penetration in particular can be very painful if you're touching some of these areas where there's endometrial tissue.
Yeah, and when you're on your period, it's really painful.
Because it's not just inside the womb that you've got the bleeding, it's all over. It can be all over your pelvis.
I mean,
unbelievably painful.
And hard to detect, is that right?
I think if men had endometriosis, there would be a lot more known about it. Mm. But it's one of those things where people are told, well, everyone has period pains, you shouldn't be upset about it, when they don't really know. And there are loads of GPs and loads of doctors who really don't understand it, really don't know about it, including some gynecologists. It's one of those conditions where there are only a very few specialists who really find it possible to diagnose. And one of the only ways of diagnosing it is by opening someone up and looking.
Mm-hmm, exactly. So, they think the same number of people around the world have it as diabetes.
Yes.
And think about how often you hear about and have heard about.
Exactly.
Exactly, yeah.
Exactly.
So that's another reason why if men had it, we might know about it more.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, the only reason I know that is because something, I think the statistic that I was thinking about talking about this a few series ago. And so I did a bit of research around it. And I think particularly with endometriosis, some of the stuff was just so staggering. I remember at the time, at least, I think the average time for diagnosis was 9 years.
Yeah.
From your first reporting of an issue to actually getting it diagnosed, the average time was 9 years.
Well, interestingly, the time for diagnosis of vulvodynia has reduced from 12 years to 7 years. So that's going in the right direction.
Well, that's good. But also 7 years, though, is still crazy,
isn't it?
I mean,
it's terrible, isn't it? And the other thing is that a lot of the treatments for thrush these days, you know, and thrush is a very, very common fungal infection.
Mm-hmm.
That lots of men and women get. Some of the treatments, some of the creams that you can use are irritant and they cause vulvodynia. And the more you have thrush, the more your prescribed treatment for thrush, or the more you have vaginal or vulval irritation, the more you're given this treatment, which causes the problem. So you get more thrush. So because you've got inflammation and irritation, you get more thrush, you're given more treatment, it causes more irritation and inflammation. And so it goes on. It's a vicious cycle. So if you've got chronic thrush, it's definitely worth thinking about more natural things like yogurt, like live yogurt, to treat it. Like live yogurt on a sanitary pad can be really helpful.
Really?
Yeah, it soothes.
I thought you meant eating it.
No.
What do you mean, no, like I'm an idiot? So what, you use that to like smear it on?
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah. Okay, that's cool.
It's amazing what's useful. There are so many really good remedies. Like if you have, I mean, like another cause of pain during intercourse can be, if somebody has really, really bad hemorrhoids, then they can be irritated during any kind of sex, regardless. Mm. I mean, it's not just anal sex. I mean, I definitely wouldn't have anal sex with hemorrhoids. If you do have them, they can be, and they're outside the body, they can be irritated. So, and a really good treatment is garlic cloves popped inside. Yeah.
And what do they do?
They help to reduce the inflammation. You can buy suppositories that do that, but garlic is great.
No way. And so wait, and two things there. Isn't that a bit spicy?
Well, yeah, I mean, it makes the bed smell.
Yeah. Also isn't
it might be a bit stingy, but it works.
Yeah. I'm just quickly checking now. I'm pretty sure.
Do you not believe me?
No, of course I believe you.
Well, you fact-checked everything I say, so I don't believe you believe me.
Yeah, I think, I've stopped doing that with the sex stuff, though, because there's no need. Scientists find taste receptors in anus.
Mm, interesting.
So maybe if you really like garlic.
That is very interesting, isn't it?
Yeah, so you'll be tasting that garlic. It'll be a nice tasty treat if you've got hemorrhoids. So, yeah, looking it up, it looks like you put in the garlic clove overnight, and your regular bowel movement will get rid of it. But as I say, I think we should all think back to the beginning of the episode where we had the disclaimer and really think about that. I don't think we can recommend this one. So again, don't listen to what Mum says. Do consult your medical advisor. You've mentioned it there as well, really quickly, hemorrhoids. So just to say for other types of sex, I guess we've covered quite a few with vulvas and stuff, but anal sex, if you have like hemorrhoids, obviously anal fissures, again, if you're not properly lubed up and all that sort of stuff, that's the outside of the rectum, or the inside is like ripped a little bit, or there's cuts in there, they can be very painful. And I guess, would you be more susceptible to infection stuff? Because obviously it's just where waste is already, like it's where poo is.
Yeah, you have to be really, really careful and wash sex toys, and don't, if you've put anything into the anus or the rectum don't then put the same thing into the vagina or near the vagina.
Yeah, yeah.
So because you can spread infection that way. But if you get any little cuts, of course you can, you know, there is a risk of infection and of spreading sexually transmitted infections as well.
Yeah, of course. Of course.
You should always wear a condom for anal sex, of course. Mm-hmm. But there are loads of ways of relaxing the anus as well as, you know, relaxing the vagina or the vulva, or, you know, the muscles. They're not under the voluntary control. That, I mean, the outside sphincter is under voluntary control. The inner one isn't. But again, you know, you need to relax. And some people use butt plugs and things to sort of stretch themselves if they're thinking of having anal sex later.
Yeah, actually, Zachary Zane on the podcast gave us something that I think about all the time. Maybe it was with my own research, not that kind of research, but where open your gullet.
Yeah.
And then your inner sphincter does actually loosen. And I don't know why, but I feel like that actually works.
Well,
I'm doing it now. It's weird. I can feel it happening. It's crazy.
Can you?
Anyway, that's something to think about.
Well, you'll have to be dashing to the loo in a minute then, probably.
Yeah, exactly. Or having anal sex. Brilliant.
Oh, don't need to know that.
Let's talk about the effects on relationships, though. What having painful sex can do to a relationship, because I was reading a book called
Well Done
Sex and Intimacy by Kate Campbell, The Relate Guide to Sex and Intimacy by Kate Campbell, and they go into some of it there. So after a while, let's say I was having painful sex, I might just start avoiding it altogether.
And that's what happens to a lot of people. And then a lot of intimacy just leaves the relationship because people are frightened of any kind of touch in case it's going to lead to sex, or in case that maybe they fear their partner will think that they're trying it on and trying to have sex. But I mean, much, much more sensible than that is getting medical opinion and trying other things, you know, trying different things. I mean, sometimes it's only at particular times of the month or because a lot of pelvic pain, for instance, in men comes and goes so that, it isn't there all the time. So you just have to think about what might trigger it or, you know, so sometimes a full rectum can, you know, you need to go to the loo, that can cause pain for some people. So things like that, you have to think about. One of the big things, you know, one of nature's ways of absolutely fucking you up, really, that some people get pain in the middle of the month when they ovulate, Mittelschmerz it's called, and you could get a very intense pain which can last a few hours or a few days, and sometimes you even get bleeding with it as well, and people can be confused and think that's a period because it can be quite a lot of blood for some people. That's pain just when you're at your horniest. Intercourse can be painful if you've got Mittelschmerz, but you may also be very, very, very horny because you're ovulating, and that's nature's way of saying, yes, now you're fertile, have sex. If you're a guy whose partner says, oh, I'm ovulating, I'm in pain, this is true. So do believe it and do something different.
And like you say, I mean, in the book it talks about couples who find other ways to have sex, like we said, you know, it's not just intercourse, it's not just penis and vagina and that sort of stuff. There's loads of other things you can do, and like you say, sometimes the only time people actually they have an amazing sex lives and the only times they come to you, let's say they're in a straight relationship, is when they go, oh, we want a baby now, so actually maybe we do need a little bit of help with that, but otherwise we're happy to go back to what we were doing before.
You don't even need to have intercourse to get pregnant. You know, people can transfer sperm on their hand, on their finger, or you can, I mean, the classic is using a turkey baster.
Of course. Just a quick one, because I thought we should mention some of these creative solutions. Obviously, you know, there's oral sex we've talked about, and exploring other erogenous zones behind the ears, the shoulders, other, you know, I'm not sure where you'll be able to find yours, but just quickly, frottage.
Yeah.
Is it frottage?
Yes.
No, it is frottage. Which is it, frottage? Or
yes.
Is it frottage?
Yes.
Oh, right. Okay. Yeah. Yeah. So what is that?
So it's rubbing yourself against somebody else.
Mm-hmm.
So some people, I mean, you know, dry humping, you know what dry humping is?
Oh yeah. Big time.
Yeah.
So big into that when I was 14. Yeah.
So dry humping is a sort of a frottage where you rub yourself against somebody, rub your penis against somebody else, and typically against the pelvis of somebody else.
I regret what I said.
Which is often very arousing and fun. But also you can rub your penis. I mean, a lot of people have very enjoyable sex by rubbing the penis back and forth along the clitoris or around the vulva. And that's very, I mean, in a more thrusty kind of a way, but without actually entering the vagina. Mm-hmm. That's also very arousing. So it can be dry or it can be more genital.
Right.
I'm not going to say moist. You're not going to get me to say moist.
Oh, so close. And this one's a fun one. Movement of the mons.
Yes.
The pelvic mound above the genitals.
Yes. So the area, you know, the hairy area.
The hairy area, yeah.
Above the genitals.
The hairier.
Yes, just sort of manipulating that. Can
stimulate the clitoris.
Can stimulate the clitoris, yeah.
So what we're saying is there's loads of ways to do it. And that might be less painful.
Well, I was just going to say before we finish that there is also, I mean, this is the kind of pain, the persistent genital arousal disorder.
I'm so glad you mentioned that. So persistent genital arousal disorder.
Persistent genital arousal disorder is a kind of sort of tingly, unpleasant, aroused feeling in the vulval area or in the penis area all the time.
Yeah,
so men and
both.
Women, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
More common in women, but also men. And it's just there all the time. Now, it happens most commonly just after the menopause, it's thought, and it does wear off eventually, but for some people they can go years with this constant feeling of slight arousal, which is quite like pain. It's really not pleasant, and masturbation doesn't make it any better. Nothing helps. It's really annoying. Now those people are more likely, though it's not just them, to also have multiple orgasms. So sometimes what sets them off is an orgasm. And then they can't stop. They just keep on having them. But for some people, it's just as they stand up and walk across the room, all of a sudden, they'll have an orgasm and then they'll just have one after another, after another, after another. And that's also much more common than people realise. It's not talked about.
And people just continue on throughout their day.
Yeah.
And they're just...
Yeah, it can go on for hours. I did hear of somebody that this happened to for 3 months. They constantly for 3 months.
But that was orgasming or just the feeling of arousal?
Just orgasming. Yeah. The feeling of arousal. Well, this is it, isn't it? I mean, I don't know how true this is. This is a report of that happening to somebody.
Yeah.
But I think more commonly it lasts for minutes or hours. Rather than, but if it's happening every day, for some people it is, and you never know when it's going to happen, you know, you can imagine you're sitting there on your Zoom call and all of a sudden you start having multiple. I mean, that would be really distracting and annoying and quite probably end up being quite painful and uncomfortable.
Well, everyone would start shouting at you saying you're on mute and you're sort of thinking, yeah, I'm on mute because I'm screaming.
And don't forget that the quality of orgasms is, I mean, orgasm itself can be painful for some people. And particularly for people who have one orgasm after another, after another, after another, that they can't stop, it starts to become very uncomfortable. And some orgasms, normal multiple orgasms, or even a normal single orgasm can sometimes be painful. I mean, it just depends. The orgasms vary, they're different. And so, you know, sometimes it might not be comfortable. And that's more likely if you keep on having them.
Yeah. Well, I think there's going to be some people sat at home with their arms crossed thinking, how can some people have multiple orgasms, you know, at will? And I've never had one.
Sorry about that.
Yeah, but that's the thing. They're the two extremes and both aren't fun.
It's always the way, isn't it? I mean, you know, you've got... I always wanted curly hair.
But also it's genuinely that thing as well of people, you know, you always hear those stories about people going in to see the doctor to get their contraception whilst, and then the couple immediately afterwards are going, oh, we really want a baby, blah, blah, blah. It's that sort of thing.
You know, be careful what you wish for. Yeah.
I wish that we could keep doing this, and we're going to for another episode very soon. Please do subscribe, as I say, and follow us wherever you listen to this now. Follow us on all our social channels. We're at the RSU Pod, Instagram, TikTok, X, formerly known as Twitter. Give us a lovely review. We'd love that. Please give us a review on Apple or Spotify. It's on our show page. Again, scroll down to the bottom of Apple. On Spotify, it should just be there. Click those buttons. Get that 5 stars in. We'd love that. And we'd love to see you again here next time, if you're following, for some more real sex education. Bye.
Bye.
You've been listening to The Real Sex Education, which is hosted by Diggory Waite and Kate Campbell. The show is produced by Diggory Waite, and the executive producer is Claire Broughton. The Real Sex Education is a Hattrick podcast.
This podcast is based on the real-life relationship between Diggory Waite and his mother, accredited sex therapist Kate Campbell. The show is therefore inspired by, but otherwise unrelated to, the TV show Sex Education. But yes, Diggory does wish his mother was played by Gillian Anderson.